It's 41 when the conditioned soul accepts the shelter of the creeper of root of activity. It may be elevated by its pious acts to higher planetary systems and thus gain liberation from harsh conditions. But unfortunately, he cannot remain there. After reaping the results of his pious activities, he has to return to the lower planetary systems. In this way, he perpetually goes up and comes down. Purport in this regard, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Ramanda Brahmita, Brahmita Kon Bhagyavanaji, Guru Krishna Prasadi, Pani Bhakti Bhakti Bija. Even if one wanders for millions, many millions of years from time of creation until the time of annihilation, he cannot get free from the path of material existence unless one receives shelter from the lotus feet of a pure devotee. As a monkey takes shelter of the branch of the banyan tree and thinks he is enjoying the conditioned soul, not knowing the real interest of his life, takes shelter of the path of karma, thunder, fruit of activities. Sometimes it's elevated to heavenly planets by such activities, and sometimes it's beginning descends to earth, as described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Brahmanda Brahmite. However, if by Krishna's grace one is fortunate enough to come under the shelter of the Guru by mercy of Krishna, he receives lessons in how to execute devotional service to the Supreme Lord. In this way, he receives a clue of how to get out of his continuous struggle up and down within the material world. And therefore, the Vedic injunction is that one should approach a spiritual master, the Vedas declare. That began our conversation with the chapter. Similar to Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality God advises, just try to learn this by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Srimad Bhagavatam gives similar advice. Any person who seriously desires to achieve real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a spiritual master he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and be able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as qualified spiritual masters. Similarly, Vishnu Chakravarti, great Vaishnava, also advises Yasya Prasada Bhagavan Prasada. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the mercy of Krishna. This is the same advice given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru Krishna Prasad, Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. This is essential. One must come to Krishna consciousness and therefore one must have shelter of pure devotee. Thus one can become free from the clutch of the matter. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama. So, here we have the conclusion actually of the teachings of that process. After that, there's an explanation of Sukadeva speaks. So this part actually is also some sort of a commentary upon the analogy. It's not actually within the analogy itself of the merchant going through the forest, as we're through the other verses ahead of this. So it's all part of the conclusion in which Janvara shows that all people are wasting their time in the material world. And in this particular verse, he's talking about kings because Rahugana was a king also. So he's talking, saying there are many saintly kings who were expert in terms of rituals, of karma, and in conquering kingdoms. So as Kshatriyas, they were quite expert. They were able to fight nicely, etc. Unfortunately, they missed the point because they did not surrender to the Supreme Lord. So, of course, this is depicting a king who's not an ideal king in the Vedic sense. Kings like the Manus and their descendants were by and large following the principles of the Dharma and were detached from position and power, etc., and worshiped the Supreme Lord. So, therefore, this does not literally apply to all kings, but simply those who are in Maya, or unqualified kings, those who are not following the principles of Dharma. So, in that case, we have materialistic leaders, kings, or whatever leaders, and unfortunately, they are always thinking in terms of body and property, etc. Though they strive to be eternal and get eternal happiness, they fail. So here it says that they simply end up giving up their body and getting killed in the end. So in spite of the fact that they do achieve some greatness in terms of conquering whatever, may acquire wealth and some enjoyment, they all die. So this happens not only to great kings, of course, but even to devatas and Brahma themselves. On a higher scale, they are also involved in enjoyment in the material world. Those places are meant for enjoyment as far as the Loka, Brahma Loka, etc. So they attain those places after doing much punya, with great effort. And therefore they enjoy in those places. Their enjoyment, of course, is much more elevated than these kings on earth, who simply fight to get a kingdom and struggle to enjoy the wealth, etc. So their enjoyment is higher, being of the subject mode. Nevertheless, it is still enjoyment. So even they ultimately end their life. Of course, they don't get killed on the battlefield, but they must give up their material bodies also. So kings and people on the higher planetary systems or whatever, they of course are a little bit higher position than normally. So what about the other people, those who are not kings, that don't strive to have great kingdoms, etc.? By and large, those people also, the population, unless they are carefully educated within the Varnashram system, they will also be completely ignorant, because whatever the kings do, people follow. So if the kings are ignorant, then the population will also follow in the same direction. So in the Varnashram system, the kings follow the principles of Dharma, and it is expected that the people also follow. So technically, this condemnation will not apply to these people, at least in the harshest sense of the term. Nevertheless, even in an ideal Varnashram system, it is expected that the majority of the people are more interested in their material life. They follow Dharma, but Artha Dharma Kama is their main interest, not moksha. And it is only when they become brahmanas that they strive for moksha, because that is where they understand the difference between body and soul. Nevertheless, they are given teachings to understand there is a supreme court, etc. So they're not completely condemned. At the same time, predominantly, they are interested in their material lives. So only those persons who go beyond this system, either those persons in the Varnashram who are brahminical, understand that they're not the body and material life is a waste of time and strive for moksha, those persons, or the devotees of the Lord. Only these persons will be free from this condemnation of material life. So in the worst position are those people who do not follow the Varnashram system at all. Higher are those who follow the Varnashram, but by and large they are also attached to material environment. And only those at the top of the system, that is, some of the Brahmanas who are striving for liberation, only they can be excluded from this condemnation. So, and of course then we have the devotees of the Lord. So if one is in the system, or even if one is not in the system, still one can strive for success spiritually and escape this condemnation. And that is through the process of bhakti. So one who is not even in the system, who is not brahminical, who is not even a sudra, he can also practice bhakti. If one wants to practice jnana and yoga, one has to be brahminical within the system. And so therefore that is a little exclusive. Only a few people will practice that. On the other hand, here Jatvara is requesting the king to give up all of this activity or whatever. Of course, as a king, he cannot really do that. He cannot really be a jnani or anything according to the system. Only a Brahmin can do that. A king cannot do that. He can take vanaprastha maximum. So to really strive for moksha is the duty of the Brahmin only. Still, the king and, well, in general, it also realize the miseries of the material world and come to a solution through the process of bhakti. And therefore, it is emphasized here that one should surrender to the devotees of the Lord. It's through them that one can actually get success. So anyone can practice bhakti, not only the Brahmins, but the Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Sudras, and Chandalas, and people outside the Varnashram system, they can all practice this. So they can all escape from this condemnation by that process. And it's the only process that will do that. Jnana and Yoga, most people are not qualified. So therefore, we can't recommend that for everybody. So, at the beginning of this chapter, this is the conclusion of Jatvara already, where he said that one should surrender to the devotees of the Lord. And then it's also the conclusion here at the end, the final one, that one must surrender to the devotees of the Lord, and through them surrender to the Supreme Lord. And in this way, one escapes this condemnation of being a person striving in the forest of enjoyment in the material world, and ultimately duty is dharma, same thing. No, dharma means a duty in many ways. His nature is that, have this idea of possessing things and whatever, and fighting and not turning his back in battle, etc. That's his nature. So therefore, his duties also mean that. If there is problems, he must forcibly deal with the situation, and it may mean fighting. Of course, not always fighting, sometimes that is there, but they may use other methods of diplomacy or whatever. So danda is one, punishment is one. They may use other methods of alliances or dissension or whatever to solve problems. But nevertheless, they do have to fight if it is necessary. And they should not fear that.
Gambling.
It's not his dharma, but he's allowed to. It's not that the king must gamble, but he can. He's allowed to. If he's challenged, then he must do that, obviously. But it's not his dharma to gamble as such. It's more of a challenge. When he's challenged, he has to not back down.
Probably not really too much of importance.
Well, it's not that bhakti is not given importance, but they maintain the social system at the same time, so which is favorable for bhakti, that's all. Whereas in Kali Yuga, there is no system, so bhakti becomes a little difficult in that sense. But in any case, bhakti can be done with or without the system. It doesn't matter. But of course, it's more favorable if there is a system, because that way people are in control, the senses are controlled to some degree, etc. Whereas if we don't have the system, no control, so people tend to very quickly sink into tamaguna. And when they're tamaguna, it is more difficult for them to appreciate bhakti. But even there, it's possible by the mercy of the devotees of the Lord. Yeah. Well, as part of the Varnashram system, we can say they must recognize the Supreme Lord. So, in that sense, there's a little bhakti there, even if they're not directly devotees of the Lord. At least they don't offend the Lord, and they recognize supreme power, etc. So, in Bhagavad Gita, for instance, said that Yajna is Vishnu, and everyone must do yajna and offer to the Lord, etc. So they recognize that principle at least. So they're theistic at least, in that sense they are bhaktas. But of course it is secondary bhakti in many cases, because it's not hearing, chanting, remembering, and all these processes. But they recognize the Lord, so in that sense they're devotees of the Lord. Yeah, favorable, and of course, restriction of sinful activities and cultivation of certain principles. So even the sudras have to have, you know, respect, non-violence and whatever, and generosity. Certain qualities are, you know, cultivated within the system as a whole. And as you go up in the system, of course, more qualities are generated. So these are generally favorable for bhakti, those type of qualities. Huh? Especially sattvic qualities are more favorable than tamasic qualities, obviously. Huh? So because sattva, the more one gets sattvic qualities, so the quality of sattva itself is prakasha, or revelation. So that means knowledge, that one can understand the difference between body and soul. So the more you have the higher qualities, then the more you can appreciate that you're not the body or spirit soul. So in other words, spiritual life becomes more of a impetus as you develop better qualities. So therefore, it's more favorable in that sense. But again, I said previously that not necessarily favorable, could be unfavorable if one goes to the extreme and begins to renounce everything, and then one becomes more of a jnani than a bhakta. So then it becomes unfavorable for bhakti if one emphasizes rejection of the world, etc., as a result of one's sattvic realization. So it also depends upon the mercy of devotees to develop that devotion instead of becoming a jnani.
The person is not practicing devotion properly. Mm-hmm. It can create disturbance to your other side. I mean, you say Varnashram is not required.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if the person is not doing devotion properly, it can create disturbance. So, how do
we
bring some order in this?
How do
we? How do you bring some order in the society?
Which society? In general? Oh, yeah. So, yes, obviously there has to be some sort of system if we have a group of devotees. Now, if you want to establish a Varnashram system, but then that, if you want to distinguish Varnas, that's a little difficult, because technically anyone who's a devotee is beyond the Varnas already. So then why go backwards and start labeling people in terms of sudras and whatever, when it's supposed to be greater than prominence? So in that sense, a Varnashram system as such would be rather going backwards. So that doesn't mean that one can take some of the principles cultivated there and make sure that people are not unruly or cruel or whatever and have bad qualities. One can try to encourage good qualities, which are in the Varnashram system, whatever, one can do that. But again, to overemphasize that at the expense of bhakti also becomes a problem, because Rupa Goswami says cultivation of good qualities is not an anga bhakti. So if we start emphasizing too much sattvic qualities and this and that and whatever at the expense of bhakti, and then we may miss the point and we may end up as sattvic brahmins rather than as vaishnavas. So we have to be very careful that we don't get too involved in these other things. So yes, there has to be some sort of system of regulation or whatever, and we can use some of those qualities or whatever from the Varnashram system or some of the principles of leadership or whatever someone can use. But at the same time, we can't be too attached to everything and try to fanatically implement everything in the Varnashram system, because it won't really work. And of course, it's a little bit apasadanta to try to label persons in terms of varnas if they're Vaishnavas.
So,
That's the ideal. Of course, that's maybe a little bit too idealistic. Just like in the communist system, Marx had the proposal that we just share everything and then we don't need a government. That was his basic proposition. Communism, everyone, we live as a community. Nobody owns anything. And we cultivate good qualities by the natural instincts of people, and then we don't need a government. We don't need to control, because some people will naturally follow all the rules and regulations, probably won't interfere with others. That is more or less a simple version of this philosophy. So that's an idealistic state, of course. But we do know, practically speaking, that in the material world, Maya is there. So if we don't enforce rules and regulations, there is a tendency to sink down into the lower modes. So therefore, some enforcement, some structure must be there. Now, they didn't have a structure, and many groups, it's only individuals practicing in Gaudiya Sampradaya, more or less. There wasn't a structure as such, an organized structure, a really organized structure. So it's only in the 20th century, with Bhaktisiddhanta and others, when you start getting organizations and societies, that you have the concept of introducing a system of organization and rules, etc. When there isn't that system, there is a tendency to do anything. And that's exactly what happened in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. People had different interpretations of what to do. So they had different levels of how to follow things. Some followed more principles, some followed less principles. So therefore, like Bhaktisiddhanta, then he said, okay, we follow the regulated principles. That's the minimum standard you have to follow. That he could do that within his own society, within his own group. He can't say anything to anybody outside, but anyone within his group can say that. So when we get an organization, yes, then we can begin to enforce principles and whatever, and have some unity of principles. We can coordinate, projects and things like that. We can also conclude the correct siddhanta of everything and not go off philosophically, etc. That is the advantage of having an organization. The negative aspect could be of organization is that it implies too many rules upon people, whereas spiritual life itself is not bound by rules, because it is ultimately an individual thing, so we have to start classifying people again, more or less. So therefore, there has to be a balance between rules and the individual's personal development. Some sort of balance has to be there. If it gets too much rules and regulations, then people will try to reject the whole thing as being too regimented, and not inspiring, whatever.
So that's something we have, I guess.
Hablar todo el tiempo, ¿qué me mata? ¿Qué? ¿Qué? ¿Qué?